Hi, my name's Steve Usher, and welcome to the Experience Designers Podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Experience Designers. So today's guest is Daniel Velayos from Chicago, an experienced HR professional with a passion for employee experience design. So we got on very, very well. So during our conversation, you'll get an insight into his transition from corporate HR to experience design. And also, Daniel shares his views on the changing landscape of human resources in general, and also the power of combining data and design in modern business. So lots of learning. So thank you ever so much for listening and enjoy the show. So Daniel, welcome to the Experience Designers.
Steve, I'm so pumped to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, no, I've been really looking forward to this after our initial introduction a few weeks ago. It was so great to meet a fellow employee experience designer on LinkedIn. There's not many of us out there at the moment, anyway.
Yeah, we're growing. We're getting there.
Definitely, it's definitely a movement, and obviously very much a part of really the ethos of this this podcast as well. So thank you for joining me and being part of this journey. It's amazing.
Of course.
So for the audience, could you give me a little bit of an intro about yourself and just share a little bit more about your experience?
Yeah, happy to do so. So I'm Daniel Velayos. I'm the lead HR architect at a employee experience design studio called 360 HRE, and we're based out of Chicago, Illinois. My professional background is mainly in human resources as a HR practitioner. I've been in the field for some time, you know, over 15 years. Yeah. My background in education is more in social science and research. I got a master's in conflict resolution to be able to apply that to business and also particularly human resources. And really that's where I started to get the mindset of design, if you would, and understanding how to create solutions and create environments and products for people, and thinking about the individuals involved and not so much myself as the HR lead, but for our employees, our clients, our partners, our friends.
Yeah, fantastic. Can I just ask, what was the trigger for you to then start to evolve from kind of what I would say kind of more traditional HR practitioner into thinking more from design-led and taking that to the human-centered approach?
Yeah. It's like one of those things where, and this is really what we base Lotto 360 on. It's like experience. Once you experience something, you can't go back, right? And once you understand how you have the capability and impact in your role as human resources to create and design and be intentional with what you do related to your profession, you clearly see how you can better impact your teammates, yourself, your profession, your employees, and the work you do, which ultimately reveals in people's lives, in society. And so back in school, when we started looking at this, I didn't necessarily think of it in the lens of design because I was in conflict resolution, but I was fortunate enough that my father-in-law is a very well-established industrial designer, product designer. And so as, you know, as we talked and such, his thoughts and the way he saw the world and how he created products really meshed well with what I wanted to do with my professional career. And so, you know, once I saw the light, man, you can't go back.
No, I totally agree. I having seen the light myself fairly recently, it's incredibly it's incredibly addictive, actually, and it's and I think it's an interesting time because we seem certainly in HR. I mean, I read something; it was a glancing review of just I think it's from a HR tech perspective.
I think it was like in the first quarter, it was like $1.6 billion invested in HR tech, which is like double from the year before in the same period, like for like. And I think, you know, this strengthening and this kind of growth in the tech side that we're seeing, which I think is fantastic. I think more and more so the human centered aspect is going to be, we're going to really have to champion and really take that lens on a much stronger view, I think, as we progress and as we evolve that function and business in general, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And can we just like think about that a little bit more?
Yeah.
I think we read the same thing. In 2018, over $4 billion globally was invested by venture capitalists into HR technology. And if we look at that, the first thing we probably think about is like, oh man, I have so many available technologies to me right now. What's an extra $4 billion investment going to be like? But let's also think about it this way. When in the history of human resources was $4 billion invested in the tools and technology that we're going to be using?
Yeah.
Like that is absolutely amazing. And that is in fact an investment in all of us and the capabilities we're going to be able to bring. So man, like when I hear that, I'm like so pumped about the future of HR.
Yeah, absolutely. And the workplace and the future of work and the impact that's going to have on people and their lives and inside of work as well as out, I think it's got a huge potential. I think the challenge is going to be around that balance. I think it's perhaps organizations ensuring they are designing experiences for people, but not being led exclusively by the technology. I think it will add significant value to some of the HR services and some of the automation and perhaps consumerizing some of those experiences and aligning those to how we're used to kind of using some of the tech in from a consumer point of view. But I think we've got to really keep that human, you know, balance as well. Just keep that nature, keep the balance. That's all I say.
Yeah. I mean, no one's asking us to take it out.
No, definitely not.
No, it'll be it.
Definitely not. So, and just out of interest, conflict resolution.
Yeah,
tell me a little bit about that. What's it? Because I guess it comes in extremely. It's extremely handy in HR because you're dealing with people. tell me a little bit about that. What learnings and perhaps how you perhaps still apply that even today.
You know, it was brilliant. So before. Going to grad school at Columbia University, I was in Washington, D.C., and I worked for a USAID agency contractor. So they did international development, and we would open offices abroad. And it was meaningful, purposeful, wonderful work with amazing people that did that work. And even with that purpose, that mission, you could still see levels of conflict throughout the business, whether it was maybe like cultural or business or what have you. And I thought about that. I was like, well, if you think about it, you see conflict in every aspect of business, both positive and negative. And so I wanted to dig into that more. And the program that I went to focused on a lot of different aspects of conflict resolution, not specifically like international peacekeeping. It had a lot of practitioner work, such as like alternative dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. A lot of it focused in on being able to understand like position, interest, and need in conversations, being able to map out conflicts to understand where the nodes are, the points of power, the points of influence, the way to use communication in resolving conflict, third party resolution. So like tons of stuff that you can use as a practitioner, not just in theory, but also in tools. So that's what attracted it to me. Mm. Well, that's why I was attracted to it. And, you know, honestly, I'm so thankful. I went that route rather than a traditional HR route, because it does differentiate me. And, you know, fast forward to today, the mindset has served me well, and it's something that set me up for future growth.
Yeah, definitely. And I would imagine that, you know, certainly thinking from a design perspective, it's there's a lot of consideration now around empathy. I would imagine having a big element around some of that conflict resolution as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the topics today. So we wanted to delve into design and data, which I think is an interesting combination, and perhaps delve into those two areas kind of separately and then see how we can mesh them together. And then look, you know, I think for us is, you know, how HR can use these in combination when designing experiences. So let's go straight into data, actually. Mm-hmm. So just tell me a little bit about the data, because I know you've been involved heavily around data generally and some of the kind of the levers that HR use on a on a perhaps a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. So just give me an overview on your perspective on this side of things.
Yeah, so as we know, HR is in the perfect position to be able to lead with data. So we already have a lot of operational data that we use. We have our HRIS systems, our accounting systems that provide us the demographics, the numbers. That's something we've had for forever. And we're able to use that information to be able to predict or have metrics such as like turnover and others, whether good or not. But we have that. And so we're comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. What we're getting into a lot more is more of like the experience data. You know, by now, if you haven't done something with surveys, you know, like everyone has, right? And so being able to collect sentiment, you know, the feelings, the experiences people have had with your systems, with your employees, with your HR practices, the future we very much see is the combination of those. It's not that we have operational data, but it's that you have a combination of experience data and operational data that will lead you to make decisions. So fundamentally, that's, you know, that's the direction we're going and we're trying to influence.
Totally agree. And that's something which I saw at one of the Qualtrics events, which they ran here in Stockholm last year. And they were saying that what they're seeing in terms of trends, particularly at kind of boards, C-suite level, is in the future, there kind of be sales, operational cost and EX as a kind of top line. So that's kind of where they see that kind of sitting on a level, looking at kind of what the experience is from a customer perspective. So I definitely CX is, I always kind of lead to as probably one of the areas that is leading in this area. And then kind of the HREX aspect kind of tends to lean in after. What would you say in terms of how we're HR generally are using data currently, or is there an evolution around in data interpretation and how that then is translated into operational speak or language or HR language or competence to support that? There's quite an interest in that right now, certainly.
That is interesting. And you know, to your point, the idea of like the Qualtrics and you know, they got purchased by SAP, and so the idea of experience management. You know, I like to say that the future is among us. It's just not evenly distributed. And when I see that merger, like that's exactly what I think about. Like in a year, everyone is going to be talking about experience management, including employee experience management. Yes. And so that combination of that data is important. And again, while we've done a nice job of being able to do like turnover and such, we're going to be expected to create change by merging the experience and the operational data. And so the way we look at it is a couple things. It's nice to have your main metrics, your key metrics. What are you measuring yourself on for success? You know, a lot of people think of that as like our turnover rate, our happiness scores, our engagement rate, whatever it may mean to you. And that's great. But what we like to look at is more of the behaviors that lead into that score, and kind of just like an everyday example. You know, I could want to lose 10 pounds before summer gets here, right? That's a great ultimate key metric and goal, losing 10 pounds. But what are the behaviors that I am doing to get to that goal? That's what I should be measuring and understanding. Am I sitting on the couch or am I going to the gym? Am I eating a whole pizza or am I eating a salad, right? Because if I just keep the eye on that 10 pounds, my behaviors are not going to lead me to that. And so when we look at companies, a lot of HR people right now are really interested in driving revenue, right? We want to be able to affect the bottom line. Okay, that's wonderful. How do you do that? How do you create revenue at your company? So let's start there, right? And as we break it down, like we get into the idea of, well, maybe our sales team is where we generate revenue. Okay, so let's look at the key factors that HR is responsible for that lead into maybe it's productivity, maybe it's efficiency, maybe it's turnover to these individuals in your sales team. And as we look at that, we can figure out, you know, what behaviors is HR influencing so that your key metric along the line increases and ultimately revenue. So we like to look at the behaviors that go along into key metrics.
Yes. And how, in terms of supporting that, what kind of stakeholder involvement would there be across a typical organization? Where would you see that kind of, because I think with these things, it's always about, you know, having the right people involved and having the right stakeholders. So how would that work? I mean, how is that normally?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you start with yourself. Right. Like, you're right. It's better to have, leadership involved, you know, whatever stakeholders are apparent to you. Maybe it's the customer, maybe it's that sales team, maybe it's the sales, assistant or associate and everyone. But the reality is all of us are busy. All of us have our own goals to take care of. And, you know, this is HR leading. Right. So if you really want to do this, you're going to do this on your own and you're going to start and you're going to bring the value to the stakeholders. So there's nothing stopping us from having conversations with the sales leads or having conversations with the new hires, sales team over the last 6 months. Right. We do that already. That's part of the experience data. And it's us to be able to connect the dots, make hypothesis on what may or may not be a good lever to pull and why. So yeah, ultimately it's nice to have stakeholders involved, but it's, you know, our responsibility to be able to start that conversation by doing the research first.
Yes. And in terms of, because this is something which I think has been perceived into certainly there's a perception around HR. So in some organizations, HR as a function and perhaps those working within perhaps, you know, perceptually or from a from previous reputation, perhaps haven't been seen as innovators or revenue generators. So how would you advise people to perhaps start moving that perception or shifting that and engaging with the business or you know, using what you say, you know, some of the data aspect to really help them move that, take that first step or second step just to kind of move things forward.
Yeah. You know, that is so interesting. And, you know, a lot of what we see too is like, first of all, let's understand the wonderful world of human resources and how many times we are made within the profession, right? If you look at universities and certificates and association trainings, a lot of times it's built around a compliance mindset, right? HR law, HR recruiting fundamentals, best practices. And so it's natural that an HR professional has a compliance mindset. So the idea of like creativity and innovation, you know, and that thought can be foreign to an HR professional, but it can be more foreign to someone that interacts with HR because that they're not used to it, right? They're not used to HR adding value to revenue, right? That's not necessarily been historically their role. And so like, how do you start this? How do you get involved? You start, right? This is the personal responsibility of ourselves, right? And we don't have to, right? We don't have to go to the gym. Like we don't have to do that, but something that is so amazing these days is when you get to work today, you're probably going to have 10 emails in there that are offering you some type of unique and probably really good training related to HR, right? Like no longer do we have to only choose between training related to recruitment and employment law. In your inbox right now, there's probably a webinar that you can attend this week related to storytelling, related to AI and everything related to HR, related to data, related to data visualization. And it's, you know, you can take that. So that's like step one, is like get into an area that you think one is good to, for your skill set. And start playing around in it. And, you know, as you do this on your own, with your own team, or if you're a team of one, you're going to find what is wonderful. A lot of times going back to data, what we hear is like, oh man, you know, we have all this data and I don't want to provide so much data to our VPs and C-suite. And, you know, that's not the way to think about it, right? Yeah. The way to think about it is, how are you providing the right information? Like, those people are smart, right? they got there for a reason. Particularly like the CEO probably started the company that, you know, is paying you, right? So they're doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's about providing the right information that they need all in one setting. Like, the worst thing you can do is provide a report to like a CEO and them ask you for more information or the data that supports this, right? But that takes understanding and time, and maybe you're not there yet, and that's okay. But there's probably something in your mailbox, on a number of different platforms that do trainings at your local association, maybe, that talks about data visualization. So start there.
Yeah, agree. And I think for, I don't even think this is exclusive for HR. I think it's for any industry with going through disruption or some level of innovation. It's that keeping that curiosity, you know, keep that open mind to new learnings and just trying stuff. Keep game, you know, just keep getting new fresh inputs, and there'll be something along the way that will definitely bring some value to you on an individual level or to your organization. And I'd also maybe perhaps, you know, let me know your thoughts on this. I mean, I think also, I used the term last week in a workshop, but it's something from a very old colleague from many years ago, but it was kind of taking pigeon steps. So these kind of small steps that are really small, but over time then make up, you know, can make a significant difference. So it's kind of taking pigeon steps with maybe a particular set of data, keep it super simple, really narrow, and then just delve in with further analysis work, or just spending more time with those people in which then you're maybe getting a particular, some kind of feedback or sentiment score, is then just delving in a little bit deeper with that group, maybe do a couple of little workshops, something just to pull out and extract some more themes and stories that you can then start to build business cases with and start to use as to influence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pigeon steps. I love it. And here's the thing, right? Like, set yourself up for a win, right? Set yourself up for little wins. Like, that's what you can do. And your point of like having these pigeon steps, it's, you can test out data on the sales manager that you have the best relationship with and get their input before going to the VP. Like, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. And just in terms of, where do you see, I know we kind of talked about the data sets changing and we're going to do this, but how do you see data generally evolving for organizations? Just as a very broad topic, I know, but just any thoughts around any trends or anything that you see kind of coming over the, perhaps this year and next year, any particular areas that you see popping up?
Yeah, great question. A couple things, the idea of experience management. I mean, that's just that idea. Like, I'm sure your listeners and people that you interact with, like, get it. But everyone else that may or may not understand this term, or may think that employee experience is a fad, like, this is going to be front and center, and whatever data that's related to it and whatever best practices come out of it are going to be important. Related to that, and this is just very high level, but we need to understand how to, some people say storytell with data, but I like to think about it as visualize data, because that's going to be a communication tool that's going to be of utmost importance to us. Because just as humans, we're able to understand things visually a lot easier sometimes, and a lot better, and be able to comprehend a lot more information at one time visually.
Yes. That's super interesting, because I've come across very recently some amazing illustrators who come from very much kind of design backgrounds, but have actually, there was one chap, I can't remember his name, but he works with kind of the CEOs of large scale organizations. So he'll get a phone call from kind of the BP CEO, sent out, flown out somewhere. And then as they're doing a strategy meeting, he will literally in real time create a live board, which is then obviously from a visual point of view, and it illustrates the conversation. So you get it in context and you get it in one shot. And I thought, what a fascinating job to have, lots of travel. But I thought, it just recognize that also when you're kind of maybe shaping that story, it's thinking about your audience. Is it going to be numerically focused? Is it perhaps an illustration that could help? Is it maybe a small journey map that might help? Is it something? So just have something that kind of resonates with the audience you're trying to engage with. That's super important.
Absolutely. And just a couple quick things related to that.
Yeah.
To your point of like pigeon steps and getting into something, like most of us are going to be on social media today a gajillion times. Like, follow these people, right? Yes. Follow them and see it on your Instagram feed. Like, get those ideas right there. Another thing related to like experiences, if you want to build an experience around this for your team and you want to understand what like maybe data relates to, like experience it outside and how it may be represented. So for example, take your team to your local botanical gardens, right? And like the mission of that is like enjoy nature and the beauty of it.
Yeah.
But look at the contrast. What is nature showing you related to colors? What are they showing you related to like how big a petal of a flower is, or how green a leaf is compared to another, and that contrast, right? And take that information back to your work and be able to try to use those experiences in how you communicate, right? Like the idea of like anything we're doing, storytelling, data, user experience, there are so many opportunities for us on consumer levels and experience levels to be able to understand and contrast the thought to be able to apply it to our work.
Absolutely. And I will, any listeners out there, there is just so many learnings outside of work context that is you could just easily translate over and into the workplace. I totally second that. It's probably where I get the largest proportion of my inspiration, for sure, without a doubt. So this leads us nicely onto design. So we have the data kind of element, and then more into the design. So this is interesting, because this is an area, an example for us here in Sweden. Daniel was involved. I co-created an event in Stockholm here on Friday, and it was literally using the two keywords employee experience design, or three words, employee experience design. And obviously, people are really, there's a lot of intrigue and there's a lot of interest around experience design, particularly from the employee's perspective. What's your thoughts around where we are with this right now, particularly thinking at it from a design aspect? What's your opinion? Where do you see things? I'd be interested actually from either a kind of East Coast or overall kind of US perspective. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, great question. So the first thing is maybe understanding what design is. In design, to me, really more than anything, fundamentally is the intentionality of you creating something for an end user. And in that statement, there are so many things that go into it, like compassion and empathy. Who is the user? Who are the stakeholders? You know, what are you creating? But when we design experience learning for HR professionals. You know, we think about the intentionality of how that is going to impact the person on multiple levels. Sure, their professional level, but also their personal level, and getting to what that end user is ultimately trying to do and accomplish along with their stakeholders. But if you think about design, it's the intentionality of it all. And the amazing thing about it is that's exactly what HR professionals do and have been doing forever, right? Yes. We create things within intentionality. And maybe our intentionality hasn't always been in the right focus or the best, but when we create a handbook, there is an intention to that handbook. When we create a workflow for our accounting software, there is an intention that we're trying to get to for an end user. And what more and more we're starting to realize is that our designs in HR, what we do, like those are our artifacts, right? These are the parts of examples of our life's work. You know, that handbook that you create for your culture, that workflow that is going to be used by 1,000 employees, right? Those are our artifacts. So be intentional with it.
Yeah, agree. And where, because I've got a kind of an opinion around design generally around, I think it's becoming more and more commoditized and used, but certainly within and adopted in the industry, which is amazing. And I think certainly this this notion around this human-centered design and this people-centered, which is fantastic. What would you advise to people who are, again, just early on in that adoption? So are hearing the some of the buzzwords that are flying around experience design or design thinking, design sprints, all of these aspects. Is there any, what's been your kind of exposure to that or viewpoint?
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of it out there. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely wonderful. And one thing to understand too, is like, designing is hard, right? Designing is like really hard. And sure, there are a lot of resources out there, particularly if you like get some type of like technology or consultants. You know, they'll help you out. But it's like a skill, and it's with anything. You have to practice it. You have to want to do it. You may not be a runner today, but if you want to, 3 months from now, you're going to be a runner. Right. If you want to be intentional with design principles, mental models, then you're going to start. Like, there is no shortage of opportunities to get involved in employee experience design, design thinking, design principles, anything related to that. So, I mean, to start, you know, start with yourself. If you're really interested in it and start reading up on it, start doing it.
Yeah, agree. And just for I mean, this is just something we've been involved with recently, is just thinking about just simplifying it. So looking at maybe as a start point, looking at maybe the hiring phase, and then saying, okay, what part of the hiring phase, whether it's just an application phase, what part of the journey do we want to then design? And maybe, is it an onboarding design? Is it a kind of culture leadership design? Is it an exit design? How do we design the experience of people leaving an organization so that it maximizes the opportunity for boomerang hires? So yeah. I think the experience, the employee experience journey, I think is nicely chunked into those kind of areas, which allows then a greater focus, I think, just to go, right, this is an area, now let's deep dive in again and again. And then the design process then leans well to all of those areas, or any which way you look to kind of focus on.
And as you see, like, as you step back and, you know, more people are mapping out their employment journey, yeah, and thinking about it that way, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But like, a principle that, you know, designers use and a lot of people use is like the 80-20 rule. So if you're looking at your employment journey and you're like, where do I start? Right. It's like, where do I start? Well, think about the 80-20 rule. What 20% of action is going to get you 80% of return. You know, where's the biggest bang for your buck along that? And honestly, that's going to be a really good conversation for you and your team to have, because you're going to have different thoughts. Yeah. Just thinking about where to start, right? Another way, maybe to understand this too, it's like, you know, everyone wants to add a bot to something today. It's kind of like AI, right? Well, it is AI. Everyone wants to add a bot to this. And, you know, we get companies to help us map out what that conversation is going to look like. But something that you and your team can do to really understand how communication works is, like, go volunteer at a daycare center and talk to 4-year-olds. And then the next day, right, go volunteer and talk to people at a retirement community, 90-year-olds, and see how, you know, that contrast is. And better, after that, go volunteer somewhere where there are individuals with maybe some type of disabilities.
Yes.
Whether if it's like a mental or physical type of disability, and then contrast it with that and take those experiences related to your task with bots, which again is kind of like another idea related to design. How can I create something that my 5-year-old niece can do and my 90-year-old grandmother can do, and that is inclusive to all people? Like, that's a tough challenge.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's amazing. I love that. Daniel, you mentioned something early on as part of the design stuff, which I just want to come back on, was around this intentionality. So this this explicit intention. And I think if there's a kind of one thing I'd like to impart on this, you know, anybody listening today who's really thinking about taking a step forward with you to using some form of design, is that it's not a magic wand, right? It's a mindset, it's a methodology. But once you're in, you're in. It's not a magic wand and something you just do and there's an end point to it. It's a complete shift in mindset, for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that gets to a point of, and we can think about it maybe like, sometimes I think about it related to like technology, that technology is in many ways created at HR and not necessarily for HR. And so, which is fine, but it kind of gets back to the point of like, where in human resources as a field are we going to get our 80-20? And that is specifically on the human resources professional.
Yeah.
Because no matter what technology you bring on, the maximum value you're going to get out of that technology is the skill level of that HR professional.
Yes.
And if that HR professional has never experienced an amazing work experience, how do you expect them to be able to provide that to your staff?
Absolutely. That's a challenge. That's a real challenge. I think maybe some of the methods in design thinking might assist in some of that and move that needle. But I do agree. That's a huge challenge. How do we break that cycle? Because ultimately there are some places that really suck right now to work. So it's, there seems, you know, you read some of the reports and some of the engagement reports out there that it's not reading particularly well right now. That's super interesting.
But as we get more and more transparent, that is going to be more and more obvious, to candidates, to society, to people. So that's, you know, that's going to work itself out. When we start talking about experience management, like, that's exactly it. Yeah. If your experience that you're advertising and recruitment doesn't match what your experience is on your first day, first month, first year, that gap is called turnover, right?
Yeah.
And transparency is going to be more key. So we're going to have to be more transparent with our work experiences.
Yes. I had a question pop there. So in terms of, let's just deal, because I know we I'd love to just get your view around HR skill set for the future. Yeah. What do you see? Where do you see it evolving? From you mentioned earlier about some of the learning and training, traditional HR training, and some of those kind of methods that they learn historically. But where do you see that evolving now?
Oh, I love that, man! Like, that made me smile when you said this. Like, you know, where do we need to go into? The nice thing is a lot of areas, but you also don't need to be an expert in every area. But for example, a lot of things that we've talked about and mentioned, and we think that are important. The idea of storytelling, both written, verbal, and also visual. That includes data visualization, the understanding of data, both operational and experience, and how those two interact. The ideas around user experience, maybe even more along the lines of like commercial type of products, and using user experience within our own practices. And of course, systems thinking. A lot of what we're going to be doing is related to interdependency of our functions in HR. So no longer is recruitment going to be recruitment, but you're going to be measured on your ultimate goals, on, you know, those key metrics, right? It's not going to be placement, but it's going to be tenure, retention, value, productivity. You know, that's what we're going to get paid on. So having more of a longitudinal type of view related to how you measure is going to be important. You know, a lot of things, but you know, just top of mind, those are things that we work on. And again, it's like, whenever you get into this, the best way to make this information stick is with experiences, right? I mean, like, tons of people told me what it's going to be like to be a father, and everyone was right, right? Like everything you hear about parenting is right, but you don't get it until you're in it. Same with being like an entrepreneur, same with like starting your job, same with like going to university. Yeah. And so experiences and feeling it are the way, you get skills to stick.
Yeah, I agree. And as I've said already, just take that first little pigeon step. That's all you have to do. And I think I would also recommend to anybody, if they get the chance. I mean, I couldn't go to the US one, the big one this year, but the Qualtrics experience management. Did you go this year?
I did. Yeah, I've gone the last couple years. And man, they deliver. It's an experience. It's called X4. If you type in like Qualtrics X4, they have their website for the actual event, where you know you can buy your tickets and do whatever. But they normally have videos there too, of keynotes, of other past videos of keynotes from the past. And like, just like watch those. If you want to understand what the future of experience management is going to look like, listen to the keynote between Ryan Smith and Bill McDermott. Ryan Smith is the CEO of Qualtrics. Bill McDermott is the CEO of SAP. Like, if you want to hear two people talk about the future, like, listen to that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And then any other... any recommendations for a book or any books that you'd share around experience that you think would be valuable?
Oh man, that's a great question. I mean, like, you know, I love to think about it this way. We're living in the information age.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're also in the experience economy.
Yeah.
Right. So information and experiences, like that's where it's all at. And a book I'm really into right now, it's called The Power of Moments. It's by the Heath brothers, Dan Heath. He's been making some of the rounds, I think, on the podcast. So if you type his name in, you'll hear about that. Mm. The Power of Moments. And I think this is absolutely wonderful, particularly when you're looking at your employment journey and trying to think about the individual moments. You know, we always hear like the moments that matter, yeah. But it gives us practitioners like almost a methodology to be able to understand how to elevate moments, and particularly moments of transition. So for example, a lot of us start a job and we have multiple transitions. One of them is, you know, how do you transition from that orientation period into whatever is after an orientation period, right? There's this moment, and how do you highlight that? Yes. How can you use that as an opportunity? And there's different points that he brings up on that. But I think that is, again, something that HR can bring as a value to your culture. Yeah. So power moments.
Love it. Love it. So Daniel, thank you so much for joining. That comes to the end of our pod today. So it's gone so quick, but I know we covered a lot. So, but thank you. Thank you so much. I really, honestly, an absolute honor to have you on the show. And it's so great to, take another perspective on the world of HR and experience design. So thank you so much.
Awesome, Steve. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Had a blast. I really appreciate what you're doing. Keep up the great work. And let me know next time you're in Chicago.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, 100%. Thanks ever so much. All right. Thank you. Cheers, Daniel. Take care.
And there you have it. Another episode of The Experience Designers. Thank you so much to my guest, Daniel. Absolute pleasure to meet you. And of course, as always, if you wish to connect with Daniel, I will put all of the resources and books that we mentioned, as well as links to Daniel, on the website. So if you like what you hear, then please rate, like, share, print bumper stickers, t-shirts, do whatever's necessary to amplify the Experience Designers podcast. Your support goes a long way. And thank you so much for listening. It means a lot. So until the next time, thank you ever so much, and bye for now.